Hello, and you're listening to the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 1st of September, 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, Alexa, play Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Craig, Liz, Helen, Ed, Nikki, Simon, Angela, Christine, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina, news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, an article on the Great Fire of London, the weather, information about the Sightloss Council's Street for All campaign, Sounds of Nature, Craig's Black Country Joke Book, and rounding all that off, we get to hear Graham Fisher's In My Opinion. However, we start this week with some news from the Black Country Living Museum, whose specialist access tours for people with sight loss and hearing loss are back. This month, on September 11th, you can come and meet Danny, their resident hard-working horse, and find out about his role at the museum. Discover the fascinating stories of horse transport and many other traditional tales about horse brasses, harnesses and buckles. Places on the tour can be booked either via the Black Country Living Museum website or by contacting their sales and ticketing team on 0121 520 8054. Up now, we have our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. Up now, as always, we're our first block of local news, brought to us by myself Rob, Angela, Liz, Ed, and first up, it's Christine.
COVID-19 infection rates are now higher in Wolverhampton than any other part of the Black Country, after nearly 1,000 people tested positive in the last week. Latest figures show there were 375.9 new cases of coronavirus per 100,000 people in Wolverhampton over the last 7 days. The infection rate in the city is now the 27th highest in England. The next highest area in the region is Dudley at 50th. Hospitalisations are also rising in the city, and the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust currently has around 60 positive COVID-19 patients. John Denley, Wolverhampton's Director of Public Health, said, "The situation is very concerning. COVID-19 is not only spreading easily once again, but an increasing number of people are finding themselves in hospital. We always knew that as society opened back up, infection rates would rise, and we expect numbers to increase further still when children return to school next month. Fortunately, we are also seeing the positive effect that the vaccination programme is having, with hospitalisations and deaths much lower now than they were during the peak of the third wave. It's also important to note that the majority of people ending up in hospital have not, for whatever reason, been vaccinated. The evidence is clear that having your COVID-19 vaccine will give you the best possible protection against this virus. And remember, you must get both doses 8 weeks apart in order to get the best level of protection. So if you've not already had your first jab, or you are now due your second, please pop along to one of our vaccination clinics as soon as you can."
A council paid out more than £1 million in compensation over the last 5 years, with injuries caused by slabs, trees and drains, and pothole damage to cars, amongst the reasons for payouts. Wolverhampton Council has been forced to pay compensation 282 times since 2016. Most of the claims were made by drivers whose vehicles had been damaged by potholes or people who had been injured falling over. But there were also much more serious claims brought, including by people who had suffered abuse while in care. A total of £1.1 million was paid out by the City Council between January 2016 and June 2021. 10 payments of £20,000 or more were made, the highest payout being £105,670 for the authority failing to remove a child from their grandmother who had a history of physical abuse against her own children. The most common payouts were due to potholes, with 78 payments made at the cost of nearly £49,000. These mostly concerned damage to vehicles, but also included people who had fallen after stepping into potholes. Payouts for trips leading to injuries had the highest combined total of more than £315,000. Incidents included someone who tripped over the remnants of a metal stump in the pavement, suffering facial injuries. Another person who was hit in the eye with a stone while cutting grass on a ride-on mower was paid £50,000, the data shows. Opposition councillor Uday Singh said he was astounded by the number of payouts made by the Labour-run council. He said, "Quite frankly, I'm astounded Wolverhampton Council has paid out over £1 million in compensation. Not only has the council taxpayer been stuck with a bill of over £1 million, but in many cases, it is our residents who have suffered harm and had to seek compensation from their own council. Many of these payments could have been avoided if the council focused more on frontline delivery and less on other things like PR. While accidents happen, a good number of these incidents could have been easily avoided." But a council spokesman said, "Wolverhampton Council has been independently judged to be amongst the top 5% of claim handlers nationally, and that includes both the public and private sector."
A Black Country MP has been named the UK's trade envoy to Brazil. Marco Longhi said he hoped the role would lead to a jobs boost for the region after he became one of 10 new trade czars appointed by Boris Johnson. The others include England and Worcestershire cricket legend Ian Botham, a staunch Brexiteer who's been tasked with drumming up trade in Australia. International Trade Secretary Liz Truss said the envoys' roles will see them promote UK trade, drive economic growth and encourage investment. Mr. Longhi was a councillor in Warsaw and served as borough mayor before he was elected Dudley North MP in 2019. He previously worked in the gas and oil industries in Brazil, where he met his wife Andrea. Mr. Longhi said he was very excited about the opportunities his new role presented for both countries. "I want to develop stronger bilateral opportunities and arrangements," he said. "This will bring more trade and will mean more jobs for the UK PLC and, of course, for the Black Country."
Tourist attractions across the West Midlands and Staffordshire have enjoyed a bank holiday boom in business, with families flocking to them over the bank holiday weekend. Zoos, museums and theme parks have all seen a surge in footfall as people look closer to home to sample the sights on their doorstep instead of getting away. And it has led to a really positive summer, with West Midlands Safari Park in particular seeing its red panda cottages already sold out for the rest of the year. It joins the likes of other attractions which have seen a boost in visitors, as they aim to bounce back from opening and closing frequently during three lockdowns. Managing Director Chris Kelly said, "We've had an incredible summer here at West Midlands Safari Park, and it's been fantastic welcoming families back to enjoy the school holidays. We've had multiple sold-out dates over the past few weeks, and have certainly seen an increase in footfall as a result of the surge in demand for UK-based days out." Derek Grove, Director of Dudley Zoo, said the attraction's visitor numbers are expected to hit 60,000 overall this month, as he hailed a really good August. He said, "It's been incredible, to be honest, because we've not had the greatest weather in August, but last week we had some very good weather, which will hopefully continue. It's great to see people again, because we've opened and we've closed several times and lived under different restrictions. And when people do go out, they come and visit us. People aren't having the amount of summer holidays they did before, and instead are going to their local visitor attractions, which we are benefiting from."
A record number of households purchased their first home in parts of the Black Country through the government's Help to Buy equity loan scheme last year, figures reveal. But housing campaigners claim the scheme is sticking a plaster on the failure to build enough homes nationally, while doing nothing to help renters with no savings. Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government data shows 238 loans were given to first-time buyers in Wolverhampton using the scheme in the year to March, 53 more than the previous year and the highest number since the scheme launched in 2013. The loans amounted to £10.7 million in total, equating to an average of £42,200. While in Dudley, 156 loans were given to first-time buyers using the scheme in the same time period, 37 more than the previous year, and again the highest number since the scheme launched in 2013. The loans amounted to £8.7 million in total, equating to an average of £48,000. Across England, £4 billion worth of Help to Buy loans were handed out in 2020 to 2021, when more than 55,600 households benefited from the scheme, a record high. But Priced Out, which campaigns for affordable house prices, said the fact so many people have to borrow money to buy their first home shows a failure to control house price inflation. Anya Martin, director, said, "Prices have risen faster than incomes for decades now, and all because we have failed to meet higher demand with higher supply. The government is not doing enough to ensure more people can buy their first home. They hold the levellers to stabilise or bring down house prices, but instead of allowing more homes to be built, they keep pumping up the market with more cash."
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen, back with the latest news and updates from the Beacon Centre. First up this week, will you make it as September to remember? Our virtual activity timetable will have a new look from September. Who can believe we're heading into autumn already? But it'll still feature some of the old favourites. Our activities are free and you can join via Zoom or the telephone. To find out more, email Kim Williams at kwilliams@beaconvision.org or call 01902 880 111. Now, you can't buy happiness, but you can buy books. And we think that's kind of the same thing. Our stores have got some amazing books at bargain prices. Find out where your nearest Beacon store is on our website, www.beaconvision.org/shops. That's www.beaconvision.org/shops. If you've got some site you need to make the most of in order to read, why not speak to our site loss advisors who can help? Call them on 01902 880 111. Alternatively, if you need your stories in your audio form, then you can sign up to RNIB's free talking book service at www.rnib.org.uk/talking-books-service. While we're on the subject of our shops, did you know that we offer free home clearances? From a free service for the removal of selected items to a full fee-based house clearance, our team is here to help and proceeds support our work with people with sight loss across the region. To find out more, give us a call. It's 01902 880 111, but add option 2 to get to our shops. Our shops play such an important role in supporting the work we do here at Beacon. Around 36% of our income is from our 7 stores located around the region. Our shoppers make an incredible difference and we're on the lookout for retail volunteers to help us raise funds to support people with sight loss. Whether you're young or old, wanting to learn new skills or just boost your confidence, if you want to make a difference, this could be the opportunity for you. Find out more by emailing us. people@beaconvision.org. That's people@beaconvision.org. Lastly this week, it's time for another of our sight loss tips. Finding something small like an earring that you've dropped on the floor is not the easiest of tasks when you have sight loss. One way around it though could be using your vacuum with a thin sock over the edge. Hey presto, hopefully you'll find the item in the sock. For more sight loss advice, call our sight loss advisors on, you know the number, 01902 880 111. Don't forget, we'd love to hear your sight loss tips too. So why don't you give us a ring with them as well? That's it for this week. Hopefully I'll speak to you all again soon.
Thank you for the update, Helen. Up now, we go over to some more local news. And starting us off, we have Angela.
Bosses of a hotel which has staved off a closure order following a raft of complaints from residents say they want to rebuild its reputation. Managers at Himley Country Hotel insist they are determined to stay open after surviving a closure order brought by police and the council. The closure order was served last week to prevent antisocial behaviour and disorder, but was subsequently dismissed at Cannock Magistrates Court, meaning it can stay open, in a blow to South Staffordshire Council and police chiefs. Stephen Carter, a manager at the hotel on School Road, said thousands of pounds were being invested into the hotel and there was a plan to welcome locals to an open day style event in a bid to improve relations and earn trust. He blamed a lot of the issues at the hotel on the fact it had hosted early release prisoners during the pandemic. He said bosses were also unaware of a cannabis farm which was discovered at the hotel in July. Mr. Carter, who was brought in during June to try and get the hotel back on its feet, said it was made clear in court that a lot of accusations against the hotel were quite historic. There was a lot of talk amongst villagers, but it was just that, talk, hearsay. There was a cannabis farm found. We don't deny that, but we didn't know about it. The hotel bedrooms are not going to interest locals, but as for events, weddings and birthday parties, we always did have a good reputation for that. That's what we want to keep alive. We have got to get that relationship with them. It is currently unclear whether the police and South Staffordshire Council will make further attempts to have the hotel closed.
Wolverhampton Council planners have approved plans to build 8 apartments and 4 homes on land behind properties on Rookery Road. But the proposal has prompted concerns from residents who are worried it would result in increased traffic problems on both Rookery Road and Bayliss Avenue, the cul-de-sac which would lead to the development, and create further safety issues to ones already experienced. Applicants Ultra Developments, which originally put in plans for 10 apartments before amending them, said it would be making junction improvements as part of the scheme. It also added their research showed there had been no record of accidents or incidents on the stretch of road which prompted complaints. The application also says planning permission has already been granted for 10 homes to be built on adjacent land. Agents Stoneleigh Architectural Services said it is felt that the provision of the residential units will provide a welcome boost to the local property market and provide affordable housing in an area of great need. The site has been practically disused for many years, and together with the adjacent site already approved, this will signal the start of a new era. But one resident said, "The extension of the road will be directly opposite our property. It is already on a terrible blind spot of a bend. Having more traffic exiting and approaching will be dangerous for us to use our driveway safely." Another added, "The proposed widening of Bayliss Avenue will not solve any additional traffic issues caused by the extra tenants of the development. The choice of Bayliss Avenue to access the development is poorly thought out by individuals unaware of reality."
Community groups in the Black Country are being urged to bid for a share of £180,000 to reduce crime in their areas. West Midlands Police has relaunched its Active Citizens Fund, which uses cash seized from crooks to help improve the safety of crime-ridden neighbourhoods. Each project can bid for up to £5,000 and must contribute to crime prevention or community safety in one of the force's impact areas. In Dudley, bids are being accepted for the town centre and Briley Hill, while schemes are being sought in Sandwell for Prince's End, Smethwick, Soho and Victoria, and West Bromwich Central. Bids are also being encouraged for the St Matthews and Willen Hall areas in Walsall, and for Bilston and Whitmore Reans in Wolverhampton. Parts of Birmingham and Coventry are also being involved. Chief Superintendent Kim Maddill said the scheme was A great way of using money that we have taken from criminals to support locally based projects in our communities across the West Midlands. She added, I will look forward to seeing the bids coming in and the money going to valuable local organisations to support local people through initiatives that we know from past experience also have a positive impact on reducing crime and antisocial behaviour. Cash used for the projects has been seized under the Proceeds of Crime Act. All bids must be submitted by noon on September the 17th. Allocations will be determined by local panels comprising of community representatives and West Midlands Police by September the 30th. Final approval will be down to West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Foster.
Dudley Council has given permission for 8 new homes to be built on the site of the Tasty Place chip shop and neighbouring office building in Sedgley High Street. The Georgian listed building will be converted into a terrace of 4 houses, the office block forming a 4-bedroom house, and the chip shop being turned into 2 3-bedroom homes and 1 2-bed property. 2 2-bedroom detached bungalows and a pair of single-bedroom semi-detached bungalows will be built in the existing yard at the rear of the property. Planning Officer James Mead welcomed the application, saying it was sympathetic to the historic character of the buildings. He said it would also represent a useful contribution to fulfilling the borough's housing need on a brownfield site. Mr. Mead said the properties were originally used for housing and the proposals would return them to this use. The applicant will be undertaking architectural reinstatement with the reintroduction of the small cart arch, sliding sash windows to the front and rear elevations, and the reinstatement of the railings and gateposts to the front boundary wall, he added. Other alterations very much welcomed are to the rear elevations of the property, as these have undergone a lot of unsympathetic alterations, and these proposals will see reinstatement of some of these lost details. The proposals will very much assist with revealing the significance of this designated heritage asset. He said the bungalows at the rear would have little impact on the setting. Permission was granted subject to work starting within 3 years and suitable charging points for electric cars being included.
Now we hand over to Mina, who as always has the quiz questions for us.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year were windscreen wipers patented? Question 2. Who invented fireproof plaster? Question 3. What did Betty Nesmith Graham invent in 1958? Question 4. Who is said to be the first computer programmer? Question 5. What did Josephine Cochrane patent in 1886? And finally, question 6. What was Monopoly originally called? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck.
Thank you for those quiz questions, Mina. Now we have another block of local news. And starting us first, it's Angela.
A former councillor and historian who was Bilston through and through should be recognised with a plaque or another fitting tribute, a councillor has said. Tom Larkin, who represented Bilston East, died on August the 13th, aged 90. He was best known for fiercely standing up for the town and its proud history. It is believed he had been ill following issues with his heart. His death led to many offering heartfelt tributes to the much-loved gentleman and mentor. Mr. Larkin had been a critic of government changes which impacted Bilston in 1966 and ended the town's independence as well as subsequent changes. Now, Councillor Stephen Simpkins, Deputy Leader of Wolverhampton Council and who represents Bilston East, is leading calls for a permanent tribute. He believes Mr. Larkin should be properly recognised as former Wolverhampton South East MP and later Lord Bilston Dennis Turner was in the town. Mr. Turner has had a street on a housing development named after him, Dennis Turner Close, along with his brother, another giant of Bilston politics. Bert Turner, a Bilston councillor who had served as mayor of Wolverhampton in 2011 to 2012, had Bert Turner Boulevard named after him 3 years ago. Councillor Simpkins believes it's time for all three of Bilston's famous sons to be properly recognised, with something put in place to recognise Mr Larkin. The deputy leader of Wolverhampton Council said he would discuss the issue with Councillor Ian Brookfield, leader of the authority, and the chief executive to see what can be done officially.
A cat had to be given oxygen after being rescued from a house fire in the Black Country. Emergency services were called to the fire in Steppingstone's Stamper Mill in Stourbridge at around 3:50 a.m. last Friday. A total of 15 firefighters attended the scene, where the blaze was contained in a first floor bedroom. A woman and a boy had escaped before fire crews arrived. They were assessed by paramedics but discharged at the scene. Meanwhile, a cat had to be rescued and given oxygen by crews. Police have launched an investigation into the fire. A 12-year-old boy was detained at the scene and has since been released. A West Midlands police spokesman said, "We are investigating after being alerted to a fire at a home in Steppingstones in Stourbridge. Thankfully, no one was injured and we are working with the fire service to establish the exact circumstances of the fire." A 12-year-old boy who was detained at the scene has since been released as our inquiries continue. A spokesman from West Midlands Fire Service said, "At 3:49 a.m. on Friday the 27th of August, three fire engines and 15 firefighters responded to a house fire in Steppingstone's Stamper Mill, Stourbridge. We were there in less than 4 minutes. A woman and a boy had got themselves out of the property before we arrived. They also rescued a cat from the property and we gave it oxygen using one of the specialist cat masks we carry on our fire engines."
Work to transform Wolverhampton's historic Royal Hospital into nearly 200 homes is to begin within weeks. The major project has taken another step forward after a deal was agreed between Walsall Housing Group and developer Jessop. The Grade 2 listed building off the Ring Road will be restored and converted into apartments for people aged over 55. An additional 123 homes for affordable rent and 31 for shared ownership will be built on land to the rear of the hospital building. The scheme was approved by city planning chiefs in May. It is part of a wider redevelopment of land around the Royal Hospital site, which has seen new homes spring up over the last few years on the former Cleveland Road bus depot site. The completed site will also include a large open space and pedestrianised area to help connect the new development with the city centre. The work is expected to take around 3 years to complete. Much of the iconic building, which dates back to 1848, will be preserved as a nod to its history. It will feature 38 one- and two-bedroom apartments. Rebecca Bennett-Casserly, Walsall Housing Group's Corporate Director of Development, said, "We are delighted to be breathing new life into this key gateway into Wolverhampton. We are already working with Jessop on the redevelopment of the former bus depot site in front of the hospital, which is nearing completion. I'm very proud that we are continuing our partnership work to transform the area further."
A ward councillor has urged football fans not to trample flowers planted on a traffic island. During international football tournaments, England fans in Sedgley like to celebrate victories by dancing on the ball ring. But flowers that were planted there got destroyed when the Euros were held in the summer. Councillor Michael Evans, who represents Sedgley Ward on Dudley Council, said geranium flowers that were damaged have been replaced by pansies. With an upcoming England game taking place on September 2nd, Councillor Evans has asked people to be sensible and respectful. He said Dudley Council cannot afford to have the flowers replaced again. The Three Lions will play Hungary in a qualifying game for the 2022 World Cup. Meanwhile, Councillor Evans said teams of litter pickers will be out in Sedgley helping to tidy the place. He said volunteers will help to clean street signage, while there are plans to relocate a "Welcome to Sedgley" sign outside of Queen Victoria Primary School to a road called the Greenway. He said I know we are organising a team for litter pickers in Sedgley. We will be going along with that in late September and looking at cleaning the signs in Sedgley, like the Welcome to Sedgley sign. Also, we are proposing to move one sign in Sedgley outside Queen Victoria School, which gets quite damaged often. We want to move it to the Greenway, where it is more appropriate.
The Chinese group that owns Wolves saw turnover and profits rise in the first half of 2021. Fosun's revenue grew 11% on the first 6 months of 2020 to £7.92 billion, with net profit up 102% to £460 million. The only area of decline was in Fosun Tourism's revenue. Chairman Guo Guangchang said that after experiencing the unprecedented COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, 2021 was a new starting point for Fosun's further transformation. Fosun will celebrate 30 years since its creation next year. The group's happiness business unit, which includes Wolves, achieved revenue growth of 5.3% to £3.2 billion. Fosun had reported a fall in profits and turnover for 2020 as it was hit by the coronavirus pandemic. Total revenue was £15.1 billion from £16.2 billion a year earlier, with net profit down from £1.69 billion to £890 million for the group that includes Fosun Pharma, which was involved in developing a COVID-19 vaccine that has been used in China. Fosun bought Wolves in 2016 for £30 million. It also now owns Thomas Cook and has an interest in Canada's Cirque du Soleil Theatre Group and owns French luxury holiday company Club Med.
Now we hear from Sight Loss Councils and their campaign to make e-scooters safer, known as Streets for All.
I'm Louise Connor, the Engagement Manager for the Black Country and Birmingham Sight Loss Council. Today we have done a VI awareness session around e-scooters with VOI, the operator who has trials across the West Midlands, along with both Birmingham and Coventry City Council officers, Transport for West Midlands and a local councillor. They've been finding out the difficulties that the VI community experienced with regards to e-scooters and why we have the asks that we do currently have, and how we can work together collaboratively to move forward in progressing so that those asks become reality. So we've had, as I say, local councillors and officers and VOI themselves go out and have a session with the sim specs to have a look at the difficulties that we have. We had some ride by on the scooters. We had a look at the difficulties with the incentivised parking zones, along with the flexi approach and why we're asking for them to be mandatory, and just gave them the opportunity to understand why sometimes things may work on paper, don't work in reality. As you can imagine, and most people will be able to understand that when you can't see something or you have limited vision, it's really important to be able to hear them. Currently, we're not able to do that, so it's even more difficult to identify when the e-scooters are near. So to have an AVA, or the Acoustic Vehicle Alert, put onto them will mean that we can take our part in being responsible for ourselves and other people, because we'll be able to hear them. I think there's a place for everything in society, as long as it's not at the detriment of safety for other road users and pedestrians. We're not about stopping people who are able to have fun on them and use them for the correct purposes and not be able to do that. But currently, it is at the detriment of the safety of other people, and it's important that for it to be able to continue in a way that people want and expect it can continue, that we do get the safety aspects sorted out as soon as possible. So the Streets for All campaign is exactly what it says on the tin. You know, we want to make our streets safe and accessible for all. We're asking for all e-scooters to have an acoustic vehicle alert that is the same across the board. So no matter where you are in the country, you can identify the e-scooter. That all e-scooters are parked on the carriageway instead of on the pavement. Better, tighter, more restricted geofencing so that it can be identified if the scooters are on the pavement. and a reduction to the speed limit. Events like this are here to educate and raise awareness of different issues that we have. We couldn't do this without the volunteers, the fantastic volunteers that we have on the Sight Loss Councils. And this is just one of many elements that are hazardous or crop up in the lives of visually impaired people within their communities. Having the opportunity to volunteer and advocate for people like yourselves in the city or the suburbs of where you live is really important. To, you know, there are different aspects of being able to socialise with like-minded people, but being able to speak to people that have powers and abilities to make positive change by giving them understanding and insight into the way that you live your life.
We now have our final block of local news, brought to us by Angela, Ed, Liz, and starting us off, we go over to Christine.
A time capsule buried below a Black Country borough library has been opened by experts. The historical artefact was discovered by contractors during the work at Woodside Library on Stourbridge Road in Dudley, but its contents initially remained a mystery as it was so delicate it could only be opened safely by experts. It has now been opened at the Black Country Living Museum on Tipton Road, and its contents reveal the capsule lay undiscovered underneath the library for more than a century. The capsule contained three newspapers, all dated Saturday, July 1st, 1894, the day the library on Stourbridge Road officially opened, with the library mentioned in articles in the newspapers. It also contained slips containing the names of people involved either in building the library or the opening ceremony, and a book containing a list of the council committees at the time. A letter, worn away by the sands of time, was also inside, but experts have been able to transcribe it. It was written by David Millington, chairman of the library committee, to the Earl and Countess of Dudley to thank them for attending the opening ceremony, which saw the laying of the Free Library Foundation Stone. Andrew Lovett, director at Black Country Living Museum, said, "We were absolutely delighted to learn about this century-old time capsule. I doubt those who put it together could ever have imagined that Woodside Library would end up being taken apart brick by brick to be enjoyed at a lively and flourishing living museum. But I've no doubt they'd be overjoyed to see it being kept alive for future generations. A huge thanks to Dudley Council for helping us to translocate this incredible piece of history."
A city's forgotten war memorial is in line for a £3,000 revamp after concerns were raised over its poor condition. The century-old First World War Memorial Cross at the junction of Compton Road and Crawford Road, Wolverhampton, sits at the site of the former Trinity Wesleyan Church, which was bulldozed in the mid-1970s to make way for homes. Councillor Mike Hardacre said residents had pointed out that the monument had fallen into disrepair and had raised concerns over the spiked fence around it, prompting him to put forward £3,000 of his ward funds to pay for a revamp. It is hoped the work will be completed in the coming weeks, in time for a short memorial service there on November the 11th to mark Remembrance Day. Park Ward Councillor Mr Hardacre said the site had belonged to the church until the land was bought by Accord Housing. As it stands, no one is willing to take responsibility for its upkeep, so it is effectively an orphan war memorial, he said. There are 22 names on there, including four officers, so that's 22 families who lived in the Compton Chapel Ash area who lost people in the First World War. In some respects, it has been forgotten, and residents have pointed out to me that it needs some care and attention. It clearly needs looking after and renovating, which is why I'm using ward funds to get it back into decent shape. The memorial should be kept in a manner that honours those who gave their lives.
The trials and tribulations of an unprecedented school year for pupils at a Black Country Academy will be laid bare in a new television documentary. 16, Class of 2021, will showcase the pupils of the Link Academy in Netherton as they experienced possibly the most challenging year in living memory, juggling lockdowns, testing and exam chaos. Stephen Clark, Marketing Manager for Dudley Academies Trust, said the school had been approached to take part by the production company Label One, which was looking for a multi-ethnic school which represented the region. He said, "The link is mostly working class with lots of self-employed families and is also connected with the modern world through social media." Principal Emma Edwards Morgan said it was a surprise to find the school had been selected, but also said it was a positive way of showcasing the school and the region. Among the pupils featured on the documentary will be a cheeky footballer Callum, head girl Amina, and our best friend Sade, with the cameras capturing their family lives and how they feel about their studies. Callum said, "Most of my year 11 school life's been sat at home working on a laptop, which is the most unusual thing and not something I thought I'd ever be doing." Amina said, "They're going to write exam questions for us in a few years and pinpoint how our life was." Sade said, "This year's been a mad year. My exams have been scrapped, I've been doing online lessons, and I'm trying to work out what to do with my life when they all call us the COVID kids. 16, class of 2021, is on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. on Thursdays."
The authors of a series of children's stories in Black Country dialect have released another book about the adventures of two cats. It's a Rock Out by Tim Vincent and Gordon Fantham. It's the sixth in the Glastonbury and Bone series of children's picture books, which are written in Black Country dialect, but feature a translation for those who don't understand. The books follow the capers of Glastonbury, a posh elderly cat who settles in the Black Country and hangs out with fellow cat Bone at the Grease Monkey's garage. Gordon, a mechanic who lives in Swindon near Dudley, says Bone and his friends teach Glastonbury the strange new customs and language of the Black Country. It's a Rock Out sees the cats heading to a festival of games including spanner throwing and the Black Country tradition of jumping canals. There are also topical references to plans to build an Aldi supermarket on part of the Abbey Street Recreation Ground in Lower Gornal. The book also features a reference to Slade hit Come Feel the Noise, which Gordon is promoting as the Black Country anthem. Black Country spake is not the old black and white dialect thing of the past as some portray it. It's alive and still developing, he said. Familiar Black Country landmarks such as Dudley Castle and Briley Hill's Nine Locks are featured in the book. The books are available on Amazon in both paperback and for Kindle.
A British storm this autumn or winter is likely to be named Dudley after it got the thumbs up from the public in an official poll. The Met Office invited people to cast their vote on names for storms generated by weather systems from September 1st, and last Saturday Dudley became the official name for the letter D. Dudley beat out Darren, Derek, Darius, Duncan, Dale and Daffied over 2 6-hour rounds of online voting entitled Hashtag Name Our Storms on August 20th and 21st. It narrowly pipped Daffied with 31.5% of the 4,856 votes cast. The Mayor of Dudley, Councillor Anne Millwood, is pleased. She said, "It's a bit of fun. I'm very proud of our borough. We are going for city status and this will help put Dudley on the map." The naming of storms has taken place since 2015 and runs alphabetically. Met Office spokesman Graham Madge said, "We work with a set of names provided by the public, starting with the most popular, and then, with our partners in Ireland and Holland, compile a list which reflects the diversity and culture of each of the three nations. The first storm of the season will begin with an A, and then subsequent storms will be named with the next available letter. Not all names get used, particularly those with names near the end of the alphabet, but it is quite likely that Storm Dudley will be used, as we would generally anticipate at least 4 or 5 named storms in a season."
Now we head over to our very own Flashback Roger, who as always has for us a bunch of amazing facts.
Hello everyone, it's September already and the kids will soon be back at school. I used to dread the end of the big summer holidays back in the day before colour telly, mobile phones, iPads, Xboxes and all the other amazing technology that there is around today. There are so many things invented in the last century and beyond that we take for granted today, so here are a few. Now then, did you know that? The windscreen wiper was patented in America in 1903 by Mary Anderson after seeing a bus driver having to stop regularly to clear his windscreen of snow. She never received any payment or royalties for her invention, but she was finally recognised for her invention in 2011. Non-toxic fireproof plaster was invented in 1978 by Patricia Billings, a sculptor who was searching for a way of making artwork plaster stable and less liable to crack on the finished artwork. It took 8 years of experimenting in her garage until she had discovered that her concoction was fireproof as well. When typewriters started using film ribbon, mistakes couldn't be rubbed out in the usual way, so Betty Nesmith Graham hit on the idea of using a white paint to eradicate errors. The idea was an instant success with typists and secretaries, so in 1958 liquid paper was born and became a must-have item in every office. The first water pressure-driven dishwasher was patented in 1886 by Josephine Cochran after making her machine herself at home in her shed. The dishwashers were sold and used commercially until they became popular in the 1950s in the home. Originally called Cochran's Crescent Washing Machine Company, it became known as KitchenAid and now is part of the Whirlpool Company. The concept of programmable computers was the brainchild of Ada Lovelace, a mathematician born in 1815 who published the first algorithm for mechanical machines. She is regarded as the first computer programmer, and she could have only dreamt of what it would lead. She died at the age of just 36 in 1852. In 1904, Elizabeth J. Phillips invented the landlord's game, intended to illustrate the evils of unchecked capitalism. 30 years later, in 1934, Parker Brothers acquired the game and changed the name to Monopoly, and it is sold now in over 114 countries in 47 languages. Well then, I really hope that you've noticed that all these inventions are the work and ideas of women. We take them all for granted now, and there are many more that were created by often unsung ladies. So I'll leave you with this thought, and next time you're driving in the rain, or putting your dirty Crocs in the kitchen, or using your computer, remember the heroines behind the ideas. In road up, I'm off to get me lunch. I wonder who invented tea bags and sausage butties. Never mind. I know who's going to enjoy them. Me. Till next week then, folks. Bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Thank you for those fantastic facts, Roger. Up next, we now have Mina, who has for us a weather update.
The weather for this week looks to be mostly cloudy and overcast with some rain expected. Temperatures are currently predicted to be steady throughout the week, typically hovering around 21 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 6:30 a.m. for the sunrise and 7:41 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 3rd through to Sunday 5th of September, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. Moving on to Monday 6th and Tuesday 7th, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. And finally, on Wednesday 8th and Thursday 9th of September, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. So that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Coming up next, it's our Sounds of Nature feature. This week, we have an uninterrupted recording of a heathland atmosphere recorded in Marden Down, Devon. Thank you. This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Now we have some football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion. Wolves remain without a Premier League point after suffering a cruel home defeat to Manchester United. Mason Greenwood's strike, 10 minutes from time, earned the visitors a barely deserved victory in a match in which the hosts dominated for long periods. But Bruno Lage's men ultimately paid the price for failing to take their chances, and they're still yet to score in the league this season. Raul Jimenez and Francisco Trincao went close early on, while United keeper David De Gea produced an incredible double save to deny Roman Saiz. De Gea's stop will unquestionably be in the mix for save of the season as, after keeping out the defender's point-blank header, he then stuck out an arm to keep the instant follow-up out. And yet Saiz will feel he should have scored, and as much as Wolves have been unfortunate in front of goal during the opening three matches, this is starting to cost them dear. Lage's team men have now registered 57 shots on goal without finding the net, and while their performances have included no shortage of positives, they're failing where it matters most. Right now, they have everything but the finish. There was controversy about United's goal, with Wolves adamant Ruben Neves had been fouled by Paul Pogba in the build-up. Off the pitch, Wolves experienced deadline day frustration after failing in moves for Boubacar Kamara, Kiefer Moore and Renato Sanchez. The latter had been the club's primary midfield target at the start of the day, but talks with Lille over a loan sweep for the Portuguese international collapsed in the early afternoon. Marseille's Kamara was pursued as an alternative, but again, no deal could be struck. While Wolves were also unable to reach agreement with Cardiff after launching a late move for striker Moore in the final hours of the window. The day did see one departure, with Morgan Gibbs-White, who had featured in two of the club's opening three Premier League fixtures, joining Sheffield United on a season-long loan. There were no late and unwanted approaches, meanwhile, for either Adama Traore or Ruben Neves. But otherwise, the story was the deals Wolves were unable to do, as they failed to recruit the reinforcements boss Bruno Lage had desired. A 94th-minute goal from Semi Ajay saw Albion secure a 1-0 win at Peterborough in a pulsating championship clash at London Road. In a match that was more entertaining for the energy and application of both sets of players rather than their quality, clear-cut chances were at a premium. But right at the end, Valerian Ismail's side secured their fourth straight win after some brilliant work from Matty Phillips teed up Ajay. That goal prompted wild scenes of celebration, with Albion's recently appointed French boss charging onto the field to celebrate with his players. That goal was somewhat harsh on the hosts, who had defended superbly throughout and did well to match the Baggies' intensity. But in the end, Albion's quality shone through, with Ajay's win prompting wild scenes of celebration both on the pitch and in the stands. Meanwhile, new recruit Jason Malumbe says he knew he was moving to the right club as soon as Albion made their approach to sign the midfielder. The Republic of Ireland international joined the Baggies on a season-long loan from Brighton last week. Malumbe joined Brighton in 2015, but has played the majority of his football out on loan, with the 22-year-old having enjoyed spells in the Championship with Preston North End and Millwall. This summer, though, the midfielder felt it was right to leave Brighton and find a new permanent home. And after biding his time and turning down other offers, he's delighted to be starting a new chapter with Valerian Ismail's Albion. "I wanted to make the right decision, and that's why it took so long for me to end up going out on loan," Malumbe said. "I would have liked to have been in straight away in pre-season with the club. That's not how it turned out, but I'm really pleased to be at a club like West Brom. Obviously, it was known I was looking for a new home and looking to get out, and I was keeping my cards close to my chest, waiting for the right move. It was quite a late one, really. Well, just probably last week it started to escalate over the last few days, and as soon as West Brom were in touch, I was delighted and really eager to jump in on that one. I couldn't turn down an opportunity like that. I'm delighted." Marking the 355th anniversary of the Great Fire of London in September 1666, we have an article read by Nikki.
Hello, this is Nikki with an article on the Great Fire of London. September this year marks the 355th anniversary of the Great Fire of London in 1666, which was a dreadful catastrophe for the City of London and everyone who lived there. A huge fire swept through a bakery in Pudding Lane in the city in the early hours and spread into the surrounding streets. Reports estimate that the temperature in the bakery rose to 1,250 degrees centigrade. The fire destroyed many well-known buildings of the time, including St. Paul's Cathedral, and at least 70,000 medieval homes situated within the Roman walls of the city. Buildings at that time were made largely of wood, so the fire damage was immense and the flames rose high into the air. It is reported that 87 parish churches were also burnt to the ground. It wasn't until 4 days later that the fire was brought under control and clearing up of all the remains began. It took weeks, months, and sometimes years for buildings to be either renovated or rebuilt so that people could return home. The St. Paul's Cathedral that we know today was rebuilt in the same area as the old cathedral destroyed by the fire. Looking at the area now, it is difficult to believe the fire ever took place if you didn't originally know of the history of those dreadful days. Fortunately, most inhabitants of the city were able to flee to safety, as reports estimate that apparently only around 9 people were killed in the Great Fire, but many others had severe injuries. The diarist, Samuel Pepys, lived through the fire, and he stated that it made him cry to see such damage to so many people.
Up next, we head over to Craig, who has for us his Black Country joke book.
I'm Craig, I'll tell you some jokes from my Black Country joke book. I was at my job the other day and I said to my boss, Tanya, I'm going to have some of my tie now. He said back to me, you can't have your tie, your tie time. Here's another one for you. I decided to start a dating website for chickens. I had to give it up though because I was struggling to make the ends meet. I went into a vintage clothes shop in Dudley and asked for a 70s style suit. The shop assistant said to me, would you like a kipper tie to go along with that? I said, I love a kipper tie. 2 sugars please. I'm Craig and that was my Black Country joke book.
Thank you for those jokes, Craig. And coming up next, we have Mina with the answers for this week's quiz.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year were windscreen wipers patented? And the answer, 1903. Question 2. Who invented fireproof plaster? And the answer, Patricia Billings. Question 3. What did Betty Nesmith Graham invent in 1958? And the answer here is liquid paper correction fluid. Question 4. Who is said to be the first computer programmer? And the answer, Ada Lovelace. Question 5. What did Josephine Cochrane patent in 1886? And the answer here is the dishwasher. And finally, question 6. What was Monopoly originally called? And the answer here is the landlord's game. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance for you to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a turkey. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we now head over to Graham Fisher for another edition of In My Opinion.
Hello. For some years before I relocated from my native Black Country to the Celtic borderlands, my family and I occupied a bungalow on the corner of a road leading into a quiet cul-de-sac. Our front garden was thus open on 2 sides and extended to the extent that my late stepfather considered more as a friend who happened to marry my widowed mother, enjoyed ample scope for his enviable green-fingered talents. One year, I counted 86 floral features, including hanging baskets. And when I say hanging baskets, these monsters trailed 5 feet to the ground before bouncing along the flagstones. Amazing under any circumstances, the more so that he was severely visually impaired and could barely see what he was doing. Hence, every summer, I would take a wide-angle photo of this riot of colour and hand it to him with a magnifying glass. Sadly, he's long deceased, so I recount this both with great affection and in explanation as to why he may have missed certain events going on directly outside his domain. He didn't always notice, for example, that with a regularity of about 4 times a year, a group of people, somberly attired in dark clothing, gathered at the junction and huddled conspiratorially as they planned their lines of approach before knocking on doors. They were members of the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, or Mormons. Over the years that they had been a-knocking, these devotees had come to know that I was not persuaded, but equally they knew I was not going to impolitely slam the door in their faces. And we enjoyed many a chat on all manner of subjects before, with a cheery wave, they would say goodbye until next time. On this one occasion, I was sitting unseen at the rear of the garden when a lady, who was evidently a newcomer to their entourage, gazed at the vibrant display courtesy of our Merv, as he was fondly known, and declared loudly to her colleagues along the cul-de-sac, "Oh, isn't this a wonderful example of the work of the hand of God?" At which point, popping up from behind a large water butt, like an emergent mole dazzled by the brightness, our Merv declared, "I think I might have had something to do with it, missus." The peals of laughter must have been audible several streets away, as the team took time off from their saviour's work to take a coffee break, in complete absence of any talk of religion. And that, in my ignorance, is about as germane an example of religious tolerance in the UK as I can relate. There are, we know, countries that demand a far more hardline adherence, but here in good old Blighty, we are not one of them, and the populace is generally free to pursue their particular beliefs, when, how, and to what degree, or not at all. It's all very personal, all very subjective, and all, I would submit, as it should be. One may be devoted, agnostic, atheist, or indifferent to all of the above, and there is a socially acceptable scope for ambivalence. The licensee of an inn I frequented at the time was ostensibly so anti-religion that he refused any group to make collections or express their faith on his grounds. Except, for reasons best known to himself, the Salvation Army, whom he welcomed with open arms to sell their magazines. "They do a lot of good," was his explanation, the implication being that the others didn't. Curious. My own journey towards an opinion has been convoluted, and I have oft struggled to rationalise exactly what that opinion is. Not so much as in a conflict of faith, more one of seeking a line that satisfied my quest for some sort of truth, simultaneous with offering an explanation that satisfied my need to know it. My education in the sciences instilled in me the principles of rational explanation, yet all set against a backdrop of suspicion that there may be something more. I even explored a few options, from classic Christianity and Buddhism to contemporary pseudoscientific intelligent design. But, with due respect to them all, none hit my sweet spot, and I continued my search. Fortuitously, the most persuasive option was presented to me by nature itself in consequence of the ageing process. Although also attributed to Christopher Bullock's 1716 The Cobbler of Preston and Daniel Defoe's 1726 The Political History of the Devil, it is Benjamin Franklin who, in his 1789 letter to Jean-Baptiste Leroy, is best associated with the declaration, "In this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes." As we begrudgingly pay the one and inexorably head towards the other, we all grow older and we all choose to navigate the route in our own way. For me, it was the slow-burning recognition. Looking back, it had been gestating for many years that the works of the great thinkers may offer some illumination. So, as I have mentioned elsewhere in my maunderings, thus please forgive me for doing so again here, I have of late elected to familiarise myself with the thoughts of the philosophers. There's a lot of them, so there's a remaining lifetime of work for me to even scratch the surface, but I'm already impressed by those who maintain a contiguous line of reasoning without the need to introduce the concept of a god to bridge conceptual gaps. My investigations are little more than the self-edification of a mere dilettante, but they've already aided me greatly in my comprehension, or at least how to go about the attempt. In the Western world, a secular approach to thinking branched off around the Age of Enlightenment. Many Eastern traditions continue to interweave philosophy with their religion. Secular philosophy is based on that of the ancient Greeks, who developed logic as an independent discipline, not reliant on insight, scripture, or authority. As Julian Baggini, academic director of the Royal Institute of Philosophy, describes it, God may or may not be dead, but for the purposes of acquiring knowledge, he is redundant. The human mind works without supernatural assistance to deliver an understanding of the world and ourselves. Whilst all belief systems should be argued on equal merit in understanding widely diverse cultures, even if we disagree with their tenets, I find it unconvincing to develop strands of coherent thought that are then held together by the glue of dubious deities, the existence of which by definition cannot be proven. Hence my leaning towards two towering modern thinkers, Bertrand Russell and Ludwig Wittgenstein. The former was the latter's mentor, and their combined reasoning has helped quell my doubts of a lifetime. Let me take a closer look at my newfound friends. In 1921, Ludwig Joseph Johann Wittgenstein, 1889 to 1951, presented a PhD thesis that was described by his assessor as a work of pure genius. The subject of this glowing epithet was his remarkable Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus. Russell wrote the introduction to Tractatus before he and Wittgenstein developed differences of opinion to the detriment of their friendship. Wittgenstein concluded that the Tractatus had resolved all philosophical problems, and he retired from philosophy for many years until realising he had more to offer. His subsequent philosophical investigations, in which he recanted many of his own earlier assertions in Tractatus, did not appear in print until 2 years after his death. But back to Tractatus, which, at just 75 pages, is considered one of the purest distillations of thought ever written. A central tenet is his assertion, Wovon man nicht sprechen kann, darüber muss man schweigen. Whereof one cannot speak, thereof one must be silent. In essence, he's saying that facts and logic are exactly so, and can be described. Anything beyond these, religion, ethics, aesthetics, the mystical, cannot be rashly discussed and instead require the invocation of feelings, emotions or experiences. They are not per se nonsensical, but any statement about them must be because they cannot be proved or disproved. This view was concurred by Russell, who wrote, "I do not pretend to be able to prove that there is no God. I equally cannot prove that Satan is a fiction. The Christian God may exist, so may the gods of Olympus, or of ancient Egypt, or of Babylon. But no one of these hypotheses is more probable than any other. They lie outside the region of even probable knowledge, and therefore there is no reason to consider any of them. Et voilà. No need for me to ponder my deity any further. Two minds far finer than mine have done the job for me." Which brings me in a neat sequitur to a recent knock on my door and my annual visit from our local Jehovah's Witnesses. As with the Mormons at my last place, we have discussed the issues many times, and I suspect they just give it a try to see if I may have changed my mind. In the light of my recent acquaintance with Russell and Wittgenstein, one would imagine my answer will be even more emphatic. But this time it was different, and serve to rekindle the confusion that indicated I may still have some way to go. I'll describe the circumstances and invite you to judge for yourself. Chatting with me on the step stood the usual two callers, charming, unassuming, yet evidently fervent in their beliefs. Glancing over their shoulders, with the early sun drenching my home from a cobalt blue sky dotted with cotton wool clouds, Across the valley, I noticed the Black Mountains draped in a mist that was slowly burning away, revealing a scenery that has barely changed in centuries, the River Wye carving its way lazily through the verdant greenery as it brushed past the abandoned castle whose walls could tell a thousand years of tales. A peppercorn dotting of farms concealing the secret lives of their occupants, animals grazing contentedly, and, bar for their distant mooing and baaing, all bathed in near silence. Having accepted in good humour that their efforts were still to no avail, they turned and departed. Yet, as the metal gate clattered shut behind them, I could not but avoid admiring their devotion to a faith that caused me to question, just for a moment, whether that imposing panorama that I was gazing on really was purely down to some cosmic chance, a big bang, an alignment of molecules, a roll of the evolutionary dice. Perhaps here, on this glorious morning, and just as in our Merv's garden all those years ago, there were inscrutable indications of an unfathomable holiness, a deity at play. Indeed, as the lady said, the work of the hand of God. And I reckon, in that moment, I had taken one small step on my own journey towards understanding.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening. And thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe. Have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!